After this long holiday, Stalin returned to Moscow on the 4th of November to plan the coming Congress of Victors, which was to crown him for the triumphs of the last 4 years. Moscow felt as if it was waking up and stretching after a long nightmare. The famine was over. The harvest had improved. The starving millions were buried and forgotten in villages that had disappeared forever off the map. There was much to celebrate as the delegates started to arrive for the 17th Congress in late January. It must have been an exciting and proud time for the 1,966 voting delegates to be visiting Moscow from every corner of the sprawling workers' paradise. The Congress was the highest party organ, which theoretically elected the Central Committee to govern in its place until it met again, usually 4 years later. But by 1934, this was a pantomime of triumphalism, supervised by Stalin and Kaganovich, minutely choreographed by Paskryobyshev. "Stalin," gasped Pravda when he attended the Bolshoi. "The appearance of the ardently loved Vucht, whose name is linked inseparably with all the victories scored by the proletariat, by the Soviet Union, was greeted with tumultuous ovations and no end of cries of "Hurrah!" and "Long live our Stalin!" However, some regional bosses had been shaken by Stalin's brutal mismanagement. A cabal seems to have met secretly in friends' apartments to discuss his removal. Each had their own reasons. In the Caucasus, Orakelashvili was insulted by the promotion of the upstart Beria. Kosior's cries for help in feeding the Ukraine had been scorned. But who was to replace Stalin? Kirov, popular, vigorous, and Russian, was their candidate. His immediate instinct was to tell Stalin. "Thank you," Stalin is supposed to have replied. "I won't forget what I owe you." Stalin was surely disturbed that these old Bolsheviks considered Maikirich his successor. Mikoyan, Kirov's friend, stated that Stalin reacted with hostility and vengefulness towards the whole Congress, and of course towards Kirov himself. Kirov felt threatened, but showed nothing publicly. Stalin concealed his anxiety. In the Congress hall, Kirov ostentatiously sat, joking, with his delegation. Not up on the presidium, the sort of demagoguery that outraged Stalin, who kept asking what they were laughing about. His victory had been spoiled. Yet this constant struggling against traitors also suited his character and his ideology. No political leader was so programmed for this perpetual fight against enemies as Stalin, who regarded himself as history's lone knight, riding out with weary resignation on another noble mission. There was no hint of any of this in the public triumph. Stalin enjoyed the satisfaction of watching his enemies, old and new, praise him extravagantly. "The glorious field marshal of the proletarian forces, the best of the best, Comrade Stalin," declared Bukharin, now editor of Izvestia. But when Postishev, another old Bolshevik hard man, newly promoted to run the Ukraine, called Kirov, Congress gave him a standing ovation. Kirov rose to the occasion, mentioning Stalin 29 times, ending excitedly, "Our successes are really tremendous. Damn it all, really, just look what's going on. It's a fact." Stalin joined the thunderous applause. The last duty of a Congress was to elect the Central Committee. Usually this was a formality. The delegates were given the ballot, a list of names prepared by the Secretariat. The voters crossed out names they opposed and voted for the names left unmarked. When the Vote Counting Commission started work, they received a shock. These events are still mysterious, but it seems that Kirov received only one or two negatives, while Kaganovich and Molotov polled over 100 each. Stalin got between 123 and 292 negatives. They were automatically elected, but here was another blow to Stalin's self-esteem, confirming that he rode alone among two-faced double-dealers. When Kaganovich, managing the Congress, was informed by the voting commission, he ran to Stalin to ask what to do. Stalin almost certainly ordered him to destroy most of the negative votes. 166 votes are missing from the archives. When the 71 CC members were announced, Stalin received 1,056 votes, and Kirov 1,055 out of 1,059. Stalin devised a plan to deal with Kirov's dangerous eminence, proposing his recall from Leningrad to become one of the four secretaries. On paper, a big promotion. In reality, this would bring him under Stalin's observation, cutting him off from his Leningrad clientele. In Stalin's entourage, a promotion to the center was a mixed blessing. Kirov was neither the first nor the last to protest vigorously, but in Stalin's eyes, a refusal meant placing personal power above party loyalty, a mortal sin. Kirov's request to stay in Leningrad for another 2 years caused Stalin to stalk out in a petulant huff. Sergo and Kuibyshev advised Kirov to compromise with Stalin. Kirov became the third secretary, but remained temporarily in Leningrad. Stalin reached out to another newly elected CC member who would become the closest to him of all the leaders. Andrei Zhdanov, boss of Nizhny Novgorod, moved to Moscow as the fourth secretary. Kirov staggered back to Leningrad, suffering from flu, congestion in his right lung, and palpitations. In March, Sergo wrote to him, "Listen, my friend, you must rest. Really and truly, nothing is going to happen without you there for 10 or 15 days. Our fellow countryman," their codename for Stalin, "considers you a healthy man. Nonetheless, you must take a short rest." Kirov sensed that Stalin would not forgive him. Yet Stalin was even more suffocatingly friendly, insisting that they constantly meet in Moscow. It was Sergo, not Stalin, with whom Kirov really needed to discuss his apprehensions. They certainly discussed politics in private, careful to reveal nothing on paper. That summer, repression seemed to be easing. In May, the chairman of the OGPU, Menzhinsky, died. The press announced that the hated OGPU had perished with him, swallowed by a new People's Commissariat of Internal Affairs, the NKVD. This aroused hopes that the dawning Jazz Age really did herald a new freedom in Russia. But the new commissar was Yagoda, who had been running the OGPU for some time. On the 30th of June, Adolf Hitler, newly elected Chancellor of Germany, slaughtered his enemies within his Nazi party in the Night of the Long Knives, an exploit that fascinated Stalin. "Did you hear what happened in Germany?" he asked Mikoyan. "Some fellow, that Hitler? Splendid! That's a deed of some skill." Mikoyan was surprised that Stalin admired the German fascist, but the Bolsheviks were hardly strangers to slaughter themselves. A month after Hitler's Night of the Long Knives, Stalin headed down to the Sochi Dacha, where he was meeting his old favorite, Kirov, who had no wish to be there, and his new one, Andrei Zhdanov, who must have been honored to be invited. There were four of them, because Zhdanov brought along his son, Yuri, Stalin's future son-in-law, a young man whom the Vojt was to regard as the Soviet ideal. They had gathered to write the new history of Russia. Already ill and exhausted, Kirov was the sort of man who wanted to go camping and hunting with friends like Sergo. There was nothing relaxing about a holiday with Stalin. Indeed, escaping from holidays with Stalin was to become a common experience for all his guests. Kirov tried to get out of it, but Stalin insisted. Kirov, realizing that Stalin was conducting a struggle of wills, could not refuse. "The four of us came and went," recalled Yuri Zhdanov. "Sometimes we went into the study indoors, sometimes we went down the garden to the wooden summer house. The atmosphere was relaxing, free and easy. In the breaks, Kirov took Yuri picking blackberries, which they brought back for Stalin and Zhdanov. Every evening, Kirov returned to his dacha, and the Zhdanovs to theirs. Sometimes the lonely Stalin went home with them. There were no bodyguards, no accompanying vehicles, no NKVD cars," says Yuri. "There was just me in the front, next to the driver, and my father and Stalin in the back." Zhdanov Sr. had studied at a church school, like Stalin. Dreamed of being an agriculturalist. Then at 20 attended the Junior Officers Training College at Tiflis. This acquainted him with Georgian culture and songs. Joining the party in 1915, Zhdanov won his spurs in the Civil War as a commissar, like so many others. Straight-laced and rigid in party matters, his papers reveal a man of meticulous diligence, who could not approach a subject without becoming an encyclopedic expert on it. Despite never completing higher education, Zhdanov was another workaholic obsessive who voraciously studied music, history, and literature. Stalin respected Zhdanov as his fellow intellectual, whom he constantly telephoned to ask, "Andrei, have you read this new book?" The two were always pulling out Chekhov or Saltykov-Shchedrin to read aloud. Jealous rivals mocked his pretensions. Beria nicknamed him the pianist. On the veranda or in the summer house, they discussed history, epoch by epoch, on a table spread with revolutionary and Tsarist history textbooks. Zhdanov took notes. Stalin, the supreme pedagogue, could not stop showing off his knowledge. Their mission was to create the new history that became the Stalinist orthodoxy. Stalin adored studying history, having such happy memories of his history teacher that he took the trouble in September 1931 to write to Beria. Nikolai Dmitrievich Makatadze, aged 73, finds himself in Metechi prison. I have known him since the seminary, and I do not think he can present a danger to Soviet power. I ask you to free the old man and let me know the result. While Zhdanov was in his element in the discussions in Sochi, Kirov was out of his depth. Kirov tried to escape by saying, "Yosef Vissarionovich, what kind of a historian am I?" "Never mind, sit down," replied Stalin, "and listen." There may have been a more sinister development that worried Kirov. When he was out of town, Moscow tried to remove his trusted NKVD boss in Leningrad, Medved, a close family friend, and replace him with a thuggish ex-criminal, Yevdokimov, one of Stalin's rougher drinking pals on southern holidays. Stalin was trying to loosen Kirov's local patronage, and perhaps even control his security. Kirov refused to accept Yevdokimov.